everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I am your host, Brad Whipple, and welcome to our series, From a Certain Point of View, where we interview those who create within the Star Wars galaxy. In celebration of the release for From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, Del Rey Publishing was nice enough to let me host a roundtable discussion with three of the authors. Today's panel features Amy Ratcliffe, who wrote Heroes of the Rebellion, Jason Fry, who wrote Rendezvous Point, and Mike Chen, who wrote Disturbance. Once again, very excited for this opportunity, and without further ado, let's jump right over to our writer roundtable discussion.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
We have a very, very special episode today, pretty unprecedented for the podcast, but we have three guests on the show today. A lovely, lovely author roundtable for From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. So I'm really pleased and honored to welcome Amy Ratcliffe, Jason Fry, and Mike Chen, who all wrote short stories for this incredibly fun anthology. So how's it been going with all of you?
Hello, doing really well.
Good. Thank you for having us on to nerd out.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're all just so glad this book is out there so we can actually talk about it.
I feel like for so long, there was just so much teasing and secrecy around it. And people just, you could tell that you were all ready to just explode with excitement. Yeah. I'd like to go around first and really get an idea of what has launch week been like for you? You know, at the time of this recording, it just came out yesterday. So what has some of the early reactions been like to see online, and just how does it feel to finally have those words out in the universe? And Jason, I'll start with you because you've written a lot of Star Wars, you know, dating back to the early 2000s. But what's it been like to see the reaction from the fan community this week?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you're never going to recreate that surprise that you had with the first From a Certain Point of View book. But, you know, in a way that kind of the added pressure that came with that was great. It was a great challenge as a writer. But with all these books, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, we're supporting First Book, which is such a great cause. And, you know, the more people know about what they do to bring, lower income kids reading materials when they may not have some, I mean, the better. But, you know, also the thing I love about this series is it's a chance to have fun with Star Wars, first of all, and tell some tales. But, you know, it's also a chance to bring a lot of authors into the galaxy far, far away. And that's so much fun. I mean, you know, watching Amy's empire continue to unfold is, of course, very satisfying. But, you know, also having Mike and so many other talented authors here with us. And it's so great to read all these new perspectives and see what people bring to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike and Amy, it's your first piece of fiction in the Star Wars universe. Mike, let's start with you next. What is it like to get your first piece of Star Wars fiction out there finally for readers, and especially taking on such a big character in the Star Wars universe? It's like pretty huge, honestly.
I seriously did not think they were going to approve the pitch. It was very much like when I saw a list of who was available, and I thought, well, you know, go big or go home. if I'm going to try to make my mark, I might as well do that.
Never fails.
So this is, I have two non-Star Wars novels out and a third one coming up. And this feels like just, you know, probably more personal to me in a way, because I've lived with Star Wars for so long, even though it's a short story in an anthology. I mean, I've been writing Star Wars stories or drawing Star Wars stories like literally my entire life. Like I have a photo from when I'm like three, I think, and Christmas, getting like a little Empire Strikes Back toy, and it's like the vinyl Tauntaun that you could stuff a figure into. So actually, I was just texting with some high school friends today, but like, it is just very, very surreal to be part of this. And the feedback has been really, really great so far. So I'm relieved I have not pissed off anyone in the fan community yet.
That's amazing. Well, welcome. It's really, your story was just amazing, and I can't wait to talk a little bit more about it later on. And Amy, I think Jason put it great. You're developing your empire currently. You've just been so busy, and it's so great to see. I love it. What's it feel like to, you know, after making things like Women of the Galaxy and doing doing, you know, the upcoming book for Art of Galaxy's Edge? There's just so much going on in your life, but to put a now official piece of Star Wars into the universe, make an original character, what's it been like to have those words now out on bookshelves?
Surreal. And then I listened to like a little bit of, you know, I got a review copy of the audio version through my day job. And I just started listening to a little bit of my story, and I've never heard anybody read things I wrote other than my husband, and he's great, but that's not quite the same sometimes. But having like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the person like performing my story. And that was wild. So it's really exciting. And before I want to say something quickly about Mike's story, which is that we had the same agent. So we both knew we were doing this. And when he told me very early on, it was like Palpatine. I'm like, oh, they're not going to approve. Like in my head, I'm like, yes, Mike, like in support of it. I'm like, there's no way they're going to approve Palpatine. And you did it. You did go big and you succeeded.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I had like 4 backup pitches like written out and sent over to Tom ready to go, because I was like, there's no way.
That's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was fun, and it was fun to get to do, you know, when I first started talking with Tom about like we wanted to do something on Hoth and somebody who got away on that first transport who escaped, and it was just kind of fun to it's neat to make things up.
Yeah.
Which every other author seems to know, but I just haven't done a lot of fiction, so it just feels like unlimited power.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Very Palpatine-esque. So. To really start, and we can kind of go around the table and any of you can chime in on your thoughts, but Empire Strikes Back, definitely one of the most coveted films of the saga. I feel like it's a fan favorite for just so many reasons. But what have each of your personal experiences been like with the film, and why do you think it still stands the test of time 40 years later and just upholds as not only a great Star Wars film, but even one of the best sequels of all time?
I say there are few perfect movies ever made. The Empire Strikes Back is a perfect movie. Like in pacing, in performance, in writing, in visual effects, everything about it is perfect. And it is the model sequel in that it really takes what was just a fun space adventure and then expands it into in basically every direction. Like the villains have depth and complication, the heroes have depth and complication, the world gets much bigger on a physical and spiritual level. The fights are awesome. Hoth is amazing. the cliffhanger, we just did we just introduced my daughter to Star Wars. We did the first 6 episodes using the machete order. So 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Love it.
And you see how Empire is the linchpin that holds everything together and propels it forward, because it takes it into a very personal family story from, you know, the big space saga.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Amy, how about you? Why do you feel that Empire Strikes Back is just amazing, as Mike put it, and just one of the best out there?
I do think Tauntauns are legitimately a reason, as are all Star Wars creatures, because they're just memorable and cool. But a few things, you know, one, as is with all Star Wars films, and I think Empire more than others, is as you get older and learn things or unlearn things, like the stories grow with you. And certainly something that, like, I just find different parts of the film to appreciate more as I age. Lately, it's especially about Yoda. Like, I relate to that more, and like just the lessons he teaches Luke. Whereas before, like, I'm just really into the Battle of Hoth and what the rebellions, the rebels are doing and what they're fighting for. And, you know, you get some romance too, which is nice. I love everything about Leia and Han in that film. But something else that, you know, always learning about Star Wars is that a fellow author, Mark Oshiro, I was on a panel with them last night, and they talked about how immediately Empire like subverts your expectations, because mm-hmm. it starts with this big battle. And that's not usually how films start. That's usually like the climax and you come down from it. So just the way it's structured is fascinating. And that's not all. That was not at all articulate, but I fangirl over Empire continually. And I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, the darker middle chapter always speaks volumes, and so, yeah, to have that battle right in the beginning kind of sets the expectations of the weight of the film and just how dire the rebellion, the circumstances that they're in are very dire, and it's their, you know, it's coming right after a moment of victory, but it's not going to always last very long. It, you know, there's ebbs and flows to it. And Jason, what about you for The Empire Strikes Back? Like, what is your experience with the film, and why do you think, you know, it's up there in the pinnacle of Star Wars?
Well, I mean, personally, for me, what I love about it so much is it follows up on what Amy said. It's the structure. You know, anytime I'm kind of feeling insecure about a plot as a writer, because I think it's, you know, it's not a well-tested road, or is it the right path? I think about Empire, which Empire takes every possible rule you could write for a sequel and balls it up and throws it in the trash. Like the battles at the beginning, you have this wonderful ensemble cast, everybody had been in love with for 3 years, and they're on, I timed it once, I think they're on screen in the, together for about 90 seconds. Like that's all you get.
Wow.
And the heroes also, they just get their butts kicked in just these incredibly startling ways. I mean, every single one of them goes through, you know, these awful things that shake their worldview. And, you know that when you see them again in 3 years, which was unimaginable at the time, they're going to be new people somehow. And so, you know, whenever I'm feeling like I'm kind of shying away from my instincts, I think about Empire. I'm like, no, go for it. You know, that not only worked as a sequel, but it made Star Wars into the saga it's become. And so, you know, as Mike said with his story, you know, go big. So, and yeah, it did. And it's a good reminder for me to do the same.
It seems the common through line here is that Empire took something that was already rich and expanded it even more and really built out the world and what the Star Wars genre could be. And I think from a certain point of view itself, the series also does that, right? What do you each feel that this type of storytelling does for the Star Wars universe and like why it's essential to its world building and like why it might not even be the same without it?
I'm a big fan of like the slice of life within the stories. One of my favorite, I'm switching franchises, but one of my favorite Star Trek The Next Generation episodes is Lower Decks, where they focus on four ensigns who are just totally intimidated by like Riker and Troy and like these people that we know as, you know, fun, friendly characters. And this is an opportunity. I remember when they announced the first one, I was so excited because even though, you know, I wasn't able to participate in it at the time, it was exactly what I wanted to see. I wanted to find out, like, you know, who is the background character? Like, what are the logistics of working on the Death Star? You know, who has to file the HR forms when the stormtroopers mess up? Like, that sort of stuff. Like, that's the kind of questions that I have in my head, and I tend to write that kind of fiction. So to have this in there and provide a lot of grounding and depth to a film as perfect as The Empire Strikes Back, it's pretty much everything that I ever wanted in a collection.
Amy and Jason, did you have anything to add to that from your perspective?
Yeah, I would say it's something, you know, with Star Wars, obviously, it's the stars and the wars. So the big overarching things are within the Galactic Civil War or the Clone Wars or the First Order versus the Resistance. And that's, but there's more to the galaxy. So even though that's kind of what the story centers on, it's, I think, important and fun, of course, to see what side characters are doing. Whether it's the droid, the no droids allowed bartender in the cantina, or, you know, look at all the things that are in from a certain point of view, from the Force cave to the Wampa to rebel pilots. Like, I think it's important to see not only every day, like what people are doing who fight for the Empire or the Rebellion or First Order Resistance, but just on the fringes of the galaxy too. These people that are adjacent to these stories and living in the everyday texture of what that war means or maybe what it doesn't mean because they're on Tatooine and they don't care. And I think it just enriches the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely shows that the Star Wars affect way more than just our focal heroes, right? It's every person in the galaxy, every single being feels the weight of this war and feels its effects in some way or another at some point in time. And no matter how much you try to deny it from happening, it always comes back around. Jason, what about you with from a certain point of view and how you see its importance now having been involved with it twice?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the secret sauces of Star Wars is it's a lived-in universe. And so, you know, every character, every ship, every place, you know there are stories behind it. And you want to dig into those. And, you know, one thing I think is pretty cool about this panel is our stories cover the gamut character-wise. I mean, you know, Amy in Heroes of the Rebellion gives us Core, a new character we've never seen, which is you know, an amazing perspective to get to play with. And mine, Rendezvous Point, is Wedge Antilles, who's, you know, a cult figure, but basically a minor character. And you get to see what he's up to and something you know is going to happen, but didn't ever see in Empire. And then, you know, Mike with the servants and the Emperor is, you know, here's one of the major characters in the story who we only see for a second. So, you know, no matter what kind of reader you are, I think there's something that's going to appeal to you in that whole gamut, which is really fun. And I think you can mm-hmm. see that reflected in the book as a whole if you take, you know, any of the stories as a little grouping.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your story, Rendezvous Point. So I find it hilarious that you've gone from writing about fake Wedge from a certain point of view, A New Hope, to finally writing about real Wedge. So that is great to see. That's a comeback story if I've ever seen one. What do you feel for Rendezvous Point, which kind of places us with Wedge as he and the Rebellion are lost? They're at a disadvantage at this point. You know, the Battle of Hoth has taken its toll, and now Wedge is getting these responsibilities shoved onto him very quickly. He's supposed to rise to the occasion as a new leader. What do you feel are some of the lessons in leadership that he learns, and how did you go about kind of striking that balance between the Alliance having some fun, you know, them playing pranks on each other, but also dealing with the harsh realities of war amidst a defeat for the Rebellion?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I don't want to emphasize the leadership point too much. I mean, I'm an author sitting in a basement in Brooklyn. I don't know that much about that. But, you know, Wedge is a serious guy. I mean, that's been true in every portrayal of him. And I did want to get the weight of command and what he has to do as a starfighter pilot in there. But, you know, beyond that, a couple things. I mean, one was that I really wanted these books to be kind of a love letter to the old X-Wing novels by Mike Stackpole and Aaron Alston, which I loved so much and so many people did. And I wanted that spirit. But it also goes back to something that Rian Johnson taught me when we sat down to talk about novelizing The Last Jedi. And he gave me something that's become kind of a commandment of mine in all fiction, which was lift, not drag. He was like, look, Last Jedi deals with a lot of really weighty, fateful stuff. But he said he always wanted to make sure that you didn't have to wait very long between a scene like that and something much lighter and that kind of Flash Gordon sense of Star Wars fun. So lift, not drag. I thought that was great advice for everything. And so I tried to get both those things in Rendezvous Point.
Mm-hmm. And when you originally pitched this story, did you always know if you had the chance you would want to write about Real Wedge finally, you know, having only written about the lookalike? And was this just really exciting for you to get that opportunity in general?
You know, I probably shouldn't admit this, but my first instinct was I wanted to do the Emperor, but but then I chickened out. I was like, oh my God, no, it's too big. And I'm so glad Mike did it because his story is fantastic and I admire the hell out of it. But my plan B, I was like, well, let's go back to Wedge. And there was a funny reason for that. Like, I'm really proud of Duty Roster, the story I wrote in the first one about fake Wedge. But it's a very meta story. It's basically an inside joke. And you've got to know like obscure Star Wars casting and stuff like that. So I wanted to do something that was the polar opposite here. I wanted to do something that was just kind of hard on your sleeve, like pew pew pilot stuff. And, you know, hopefully big hearted storytelling. And there's an inside joke or two, but nothing like starting with the premise of the story. So I found that a fun reversal and an interesting challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Amy,
I love that.
Oh, go ahead.
Can I say something about Jason's story,
please,
real quick?
And yeah, absolutely.
I love your new one, but I know in Duty Roster, like when that came out, and the fun I had explaining, I was pitching it. I was working with nerds at the time and trying to explain the fake Wedge, like, and it was just like, you know, it's like layers of things, and they were all just like, what? It was like I felt like I needed, you know, the yarn on the board to try like to communicate. Like, it was just a moment of joy.
Thank you.
So Amy, your story, Heroes of the Rebellion, is so good. It's so wonderful. I'm a huge Rogue One fan. So that really seemed to be the linchpin for the story and the story of Corwe, who has a certain connection to Rogue One that I won't, you know, spoil here. But, you know, she's this wide-eyed rebel propagandist. She understands that rebellions are built on hope. But throughout much of the story, she's trying to figure out what hope actually is and who it comes from. And is it really always the big wigs in the room, the people that are at the forefront leading these charges? Or is it the everyday folk, the ordinary people that don't have the force or aren't great pilots, or maybe who just help somebody through the tunnels or help somebody to bandage themselves up? What did you draw inspiration from in creating Corwe, an original character? And why did you want to tell a story that heightened the importance of everyday people?
Yeah, a lot of things. And thank you for the kind words. And sorry, Mike's dog is on screen.
I know.
And Mike's
it's
dog
so
is
cute.
Very cute.
We have a fourth panelist now.
Yes. I want to hear all about what your dog thinks of Palpatine specifically. You know, when I was asked to participate in this book, I was reading Alphabet Squadron by Alexander Freed for the first time. And there are quite a few mentions in there of rebellion propaganda, specifically a reference to that Rogue One moment, that beautiful, inspiring speech. And to that point, I thought a lot about Imperial propaganda. I mean, Pablo wrote a whole book on it that's lovely. But it was kind of interesting to me to see that, no, of course, that happens on the rebellion side. And in fact, in my Star Wars RPG that I play, I kind of play a character who, she's not a propagandist, but she's a diplomat agitator. So she's constantly trying to recruit people, like they need to grow their numbers. And while on the surface, like you said, Brad, like the way to get them in is like, look at what Luke did on the Death Star. Look at this, you know, the big names, the big three, so to speak, is that's the way to pull them in. But that's not relatable, I don't think, as relatable if you're signing up to fight a war. And something I thought about a lot is in Battlestar Galactica, if anybody's watched the reboot series, you know, when Deanna Beers goes to the Galactica to, you know, of course, she's not all she appears to be, but she goes there to make kind of a documentary about how they're protecting the fleet. And now it's not just Adama who's doing everything. There are people at all ranks doing all sorts of jobs, and they're all protecting them from the Cylons. And that's kind of what I wanted to get into with Corwe. And there, you know, when you watch the Battle of Hoth, there are how many nameless soldiers who are, you know, they're not Leia, they're not Han, they're not Luke, but they're have really important roles, and they're putting themselves on the line. I mean, certainly the ones who go out in the snow in the trenches to basically be fodder while the AT-ATs come in. I always say AT-ATs. Where did that come from? AT-AT? I don't know. So yeah, it was really important to showcase that side, and for Corwe to take her through the journey of learning, like, hey, it's not just about these big names. Like, talk to the people who are doing what you may think are small deeds, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. It's a learning experience for Corwe. It's also a reality check for us. It was a reality check for me to be like, remember the people who actually, you know, are in the background doing these things, you know, like cleaning up the, just every person that cleans up the mess of all the big heroes, even, you know, like Han, Leia, and Luke are causing so many issues all the time, a lot of the time. And we see that a lot in the beginning with Han and Leia's drama together and how everybody's just taking bets and rolling eyes. But yeah, it is actually more motivational to see like, oh, you know, the ordinary people can make as big of an impact. So I now want to join the rebellion. You know, I don't have to be Luke Skywalker to want to join the fight. I can just be nobody or an ordinary person, and that's good enough, and I can make a difference. Mike and Jason, did you have anything to add to on Amy's story?
So I was fortunate enough to read an early draft of Amy's story, and I remember like just the first paragraph, the idea of a rebel propagandist. And to me, I tied it into Sabine from Rebels with her spray painting. And so like I was thinking that this is something that's not really been explored in Star Wars too much. And I loved that idea. And so I was hooked right away with that, just from the concept.
Yeah, I just, you know, one of the things that's so challenging with this story, this short, is, you know, you've got to do all the setup and you got to get it all there and all established and working for the reader. And then you're already kind of running out of time and you've got to twist it and turn it and get out. And I my cap was very seriously doffed at how adroitly you did that, Amy. I mean, it works really well. And, you know, I just found that very impressive.
And last but certainly not least, Mike, your story Disturbance takes us into the mind of Emperor Palpatine. There was certainly a disturbance for me when I read this because my jaw just dropped to the floor and I was like, wow, just completely floored by it. You take on one of the biggest inflection points of the entire trilogy, arguably, right? This is something that adds weight to Vader's story, adds weight to the larger canon of what's happening in the original trilogy and setting up those pieces for the end of Empire as well as Return of the Jedi. But when you were conceptualizing this story, what did you feel needed to be portrayed in terms of, you know, better understanding the Sith rule of two, the master and apprentice dynamic, and also how we understand the Force and especially the dark side of the Force?
I think so. There's two big influences on it. One of them is when in Revenge of the Sith, when Anakin finally confronts Palpatine, and Palpatine says, you know, it gives you focus, it makes you stronger. And to me, that sums up how Palpatine is thinking about everything. He's thinking about, how do I take advantage of every situation? So there's that from a, like, what does Palpatine want? He's constantly strategizing, constantly adapting. And if he doesn't know something, because he's not omnipotent, even though he's, you know, the mega Sith, he's not omnipotent, but he knows how to manipulate things into his advantage. So there's that. And then there's Matthew Stover's Revenge of the Sith novelization, which is my favorite Star Wars book of all time. And the way that it talks about how the dark side, like, it personifies it. And it talks about how the dark side is, like, it lulls you in and it takes it over and you know, it's relentless. All those themes, that's what I picture is going through Palpatine's head. And it was really important to portray a polar opposite of, you know, Yoda's luminous beings speech, you know, where he talks about, you know, luminous beings we are. And then Palpatine's like, no, the Force, you have to fight the Force, you have to control it, and you have to take it over. So there was a very conscious decision in, like, the opening quarter or so, where we're purely in Palpatine's head, that I wanted it to balance what we hear Yoda say later in Empire.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how much of the Force was almost a tangible thing, like actually like a nemesis that he was fighting against. We don't normally think of the Force in that way. We think of it more as this like mystical thing we can't see, but it really felt like it took on its own form, watching Palpatine kind of grapple with that throughout the story and uncover certain secrets that he is now becoming privy to. But why do you, I saw Amy nodding your head when he mentioned the Matthew Stover novel, but Mike, why did you feel that novel in particular is such highly esteemed novel for Star Wars, and why did you really want it to take your story to be influenced by that tone and take on that sort of style?
If you follow me on social media, I talk about that book all the time. Like, I'm constantly preaching it. And because Stover takes such chances with his tone, his points of view, his structure, and you just don't really see that in space opera anywhere. And he pulls it off because he goes to 11 with it. It's really amazing. And so I love how he, you know, he frames everything with like getting into the characters' heads, and then he gives the dark side a point of view and an entity. And it's just got this overwhelming like dread, like from page one, like, you know, things are going to go bad. And he frames it with a poem about like, you know, heroes in like their last burst, saving the best for last. So it's just everything about that is like, I aspire to write something that amazing someday. It's just, it's amazing.
Amy and Jason, what are your thoughts on Mike's story, and Amy, especially you know, being a fan of the Stover novel as well, but what do you feel that the story really added to the richness of Palpatine, of Vader, of the dark side?
Well, it definitely, you know, something Mike and I have talked about, both being fans of that novelization, such big fans, is that there's a certain poetic tone to it. And I think Mike really captured that with his story, and it's a kind of a juxtaposition because it's about Palpatine, and that's not something, you know, you think is poetic or beautiful, like the way that Palpatine and the dark side work. And I think Mike made that really harmonious in like a creepy way, where you just kind of get in the head and get in that space. And it's uncomfortable, but like, but beautiful. And I feel like we haven't got quite that exploration of the dark side or Palpatine. And I think it's just wonderful, Mike.
Thank you.
Jason, did you have any thoughts to add?
Yeah, sorry. I needed an animal guest star. I was feeling like I think as a writer, you're having not gone for that story. It's kind of a funny feeling to see somebody else went for it and look at it. But I think everybody will see as a great writer's compliment is I'm really glad I didn't do that one because I wouldn't have gotten to read Mike's, and it is so cool and delivers on such a high level. So that's amazing. And I guess what I really admire about it is, yes, it takes us into Palpatine's head, and that kind of juxtaposition with Yoda is great, but it also does something that sometimes we can forget to do. And at the end, it grounds it back in the film. So you know where you are and you can go back and rewatch that scene now with this whole new, richer perspective that you didn't have before, which I think ultimately is what all these books are trying to do is, you know, make you go back and like look around corners and, you know, and get really interested in all these little things you hadn't thought about before while appreciating everything we've talked about for decades.
Yeah. And I love all three of your stories because I think it does that. I think it takes us to a place in the movie that we don't necessarily see, you know, we don't see the rendezvous point with Wedge and certain other characters of the rebellion that show up. We don't see where Corwe is and what she's doing in the background to document the rebellion. We don't see Palpatine, you know, sitting in and stewing in his chambers and on the Coruscant and grappling with the dark side and almost having a disturbing date night with it. It's wonderful to fill out this universe, make it more feel more lived in, and get these certain points of views. So my last question for each of you would be, how do you hope that from a certain point of view, as it relates to The Empire Strikes Back, changes the way in which we view the film or possibly heightens our appreciation for it from a different light? And I'll start with you, Mike.
I think it's very similar to like the way that the prequels added all this depth to it. You know, it's all retconned in, but now things have a certain heaviness to them. And the same thing, like I think about very specifically on Return of the Jedi, when you see the old dude who, you know, we all believe is Rex from Clone Wars and Rebels, and we see him there fighting with Rebellion, and it just gives a whole other sense of like, there's history here and there's a lived life. And I really love that.
Amy, what about you? How do you feel this will change the way we look at Empire Strikes Back?
First of all, thank you for repeating the question because my cat was super distracting and I didn't hear it when you asked the first time.
distracting but adorable. It's okay.
She's sweet, but oh my goodness. So I think it makes you appreciate certainly like, you know, as much time as I spent rewatching The Battle of Hoth to make sure I was within the boundaries of the story, like it just gives you a greater appreciation in the same way that Corby did, which I know sounds super cheesy, but that it's not only about those main characters, that there is so much going on. And if you just keep looking in the backgrounds and wondering, what's that person's story? Or, you know, what's up with that snake on Dagobah? Like, that snake probably has some feelings about new people on this planet. I hope it inspires more people to just kind of pay attention to things that are just, you know, beyond that focus on Luke, Han, and Leia.
Absolutely. Star Wars is much bigger than three characters, and that's very exemplified here. And Jason, finally with you, how will we look at Empire Strikes Back differently in the future, 40 years later with these stories to build it out?
Well, there's kind of two things here. One is that I hope, you know, for veteran fans, I hope it makes us immediately want to go over to Disney Plus or break out our DVDs or whatever we have and watch Empire again and appreciate everything that goes into that movie and all the layering that we've been able to benefit from to tell stories. So that's one. But one thing I also like to remind myself is, you know, it's every day is somebody's first day on Star Wars, whether they're a new fan or whether they're a fan of the movies who's just discovered, you know, all this other amazing stuff out there. And, you know, I hope that book is a great gateway for them too, that makes them think like, you know, oh, I want to know more about Wedge, or I want to know more about propaganda, or I want to know more about the Sith and their endless struggles, or, you know, any of the other wonderful jumping off points in these books. And, you know, that's what I think all four of us love doing, both as, you know, as creators and frankly as fans, is, you know, is just drinking from this well that's brought us so much pleasure and continuing to do that.
Well, I definitely couldn't recommend this book enough. It's a great addition to the movie and really just adds so much depth to it. And I'm so excited it's finally out for everybody to read. So Amy, Jason, and Mike, thank you guys so much for coming on the show today. Lovely to have each of you and talk more about these stories. But where can our listeners find each of you? What do you have coming up in the works? And what else should we know before we close out? So Amy, I'll start with you.
Folks can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Amy_Geek. And thank you so much for having me. Keep an eye out for this book and the Jedi Mind. And that's all I got.
So I have my non-Star Wars, my third novel coming out. It's called We Could Be Heroes. It's about a supervillain and a superhero who become friends and their misadventures. And that comes out in January. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Chen Writer.
I'm Jason C. Fry on Twitter. Upcoming stuff I have, there's a complete reimagination of the Clone Wars character encyclopedia coming out from DK, which I'm very excited about, which is a lot of fun to do. I'm working on the fourth Jupiter Pirates book and some other stuff I can't talk about yet, but you know, here's to future adventures for us all.
Excellent. Well, hope you all enjoy your launch week. It's been well-deserved, you know, soak it in while it lasts and just enjoy every second of it. So congratulations again. And until next time, may the Force be with each of you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Friends of the Force. Make sure to leave a 5-star written review wherever you listen to the podcast. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can also help support our show on Patreon. Thank you to our current patrons, Anna, Cheryl, Christina, Deborah, Donnie, Elegy, Jessica, Marie Claire, Marvin, Neil, Rachel, Sarah, and T. Next time on Friends of the Force, we'll be doing a 3-part discussion on From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. So until then, everybody, may the Force be with you always.
Friends of the Force is a proud member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. To learn more about our sister shows, find us on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.